The White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the February 11th, 2013 edition of The Heretics Hour with me, your host, Carolyn Yeager. Andrew Anglin will be calling in shortly, and it's going to be an enjoyable, relaxed 2 hours of friendly but probing discussion. At least that's my intention. I hope that's the way it turns out. I want to tell you that I have some new music between the first and second hour. No more Sleipnir singing about being at Oma's house, and it was hard for me to let that go because I like it so much. But now we have the great Frank Reneke with his song Heldengedenken. The first 5 minutes of it anyway, not the complete track, but almost the complete track. I couldn't find a sensible definition of the word, Heldengedenken. I think it's not really a word that's used in German, but I believe that Reneke wrote this song and named it this. So I asked Hadding Scott how he would translate it. And he said, after listening to the song, I would say that a good English rendering of Heldengedenken would be thoughts of heroes, meaning primarily thoughts about heroes. He sings mostly about the sacrifice of men in the war, but he also mentions their motive to protect the homeland. So I will, you can expect that when we go to our break at the top of the hour between this 2 hour show and, I will try to say something about it then too, but you never know, I might forget or not have time. So I'm telling you about it now. I want to note that today is the anniversary of the 1942 German Navy's Channel Dash, codenamed Operation Cerberus, which began during the final hours of February 11th and was completed on February 13th when the convoy of ships reached the safety of the Netherlands. I have written a short description of the event and posted it at carolynyeager.net. I have to thank Willie Wenger for alerting me to this. You will be hearing more from Willie Wenger on my website. He was a friend of my friend Wilhelm Christman, whose special archive page, you know, Wilhelm passed away in December, and I'm putting up a archive subdomain for him, but I'm quite slow in getting it going. But some progress has been made, and so it will happen. So now I am waiting for Andre to call. I told him to wait until about 5 minutes after, so that he wouldn't, you know, call when I couldn't pick up his phone right away. So while we're waiting on that, I guess I could also say that the Dresden bombing anniversary is coming up on Wednesday the 13th. I don't know if I will be able to do anything special for that this year. Probably not, but we'll see. I'll probably at least mention it. I hope, of course, a lot of other people will too. It always attracts a lot of attention. The only thing I always thought was that people focus on Dresden as though that was the main bombing, Allied bombing of Germany during the war, and don't realize the extent of the bombing all over Germany and all of these cities, large and not so large, and how complete the coverage of the bombing was. So it's really an amazing and terrible story that has not gotten into the consciousness of the people of the world yet, and it needs to. It's growing, though, I guess. So now, during this past week, you know, I had Andre on this show last week, and as he said, as the show was ending, he said we need to do this again, and did feel one of those times when it feels like you just didn't quite complete things. There's so much to say, and so I did ask him to come on again tonight. During the week, there has been quite a bit of turmoil, quite a bit of activity going on in amongst the people who like Andre and like his work and his site and like other sites. And there's been, and here he is. So I'm going to take a second here and answer this call. I do it slowly so I won't make a mistake. That's what seems to be. You might wonder about that, but okay. Oh, I don't. Here he is.
Yep.
Well, Andre, we're on here together. You know, my Skype page has totally changed. The way it presents itself just since a couple days ago, I don't know what happened, but nothing is familiar to me, but here you are. How are you?
Yeah, they did an update, and it's doesn't seem to be for the better. I'm all right. I just had dinner with Mike Delaney, so that was good.
Well, great. So you didn't have much time with Mike, did you?
No, but he was kind of in a hurry himself. He had to get to someplace in Indiana tonight, so.
Okay, well, let's just tell the listeners, because I didn't mention that, Mike was coming down, driving through Ohio, and he wanted to stop and see you. And so you went out and you met him at a restaurant, and you're still hanging around there somewhere. So that's good that you finished your conversation with him. And where are you now?
I'm on my way home.
Are you driving?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're probably not that far from home, right?
No, it's not too far.
Okay, well, you're better than me. You can do several things at once, whereas... you know, I'd have a little bit of trouble driving and talking.
Yeah.
But you can
do
it.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that.
All righty. Well, I was just telling people what kind of a week it's been since you were on last Monday. And, well, we've got quite a big jump in listeners already. They want to know, too. So it involved Mike Delaney and a lot of things that were going on. And Mike had a program. Just last night, I listened to it about the issues and said would have more to say later. Do you want to share? You want to say anything about your meeting with him, or do you not?
About the meeting with him, we just sat down and talked. It wasn't a serious strategy meeting or anything. We just had dinner together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how, so, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Well, I don't really have anything to say about it. I'm just prepared.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything to say about it either. I think it's good to meet people in real life, and I hope other people start doing that. We talked a little bit about this anonymity issue and how it just makes everything so confusing. And it kind of fuels all the craziness that goes on the internet, I think, when everybody's anonymous and they don't feel the need to attach their name to what they're saying. How strongly can they really feel about it, I guess?
Or how much credibility, should people put in them when they don't? You know, I'm just so glad this came up, because I have been one who would get irritated, and I would realize it is because I'm talking or arguing with someone who he knows, it's usually a he knows who I am, you know, and he knows everything that can be known about me that's at least, you know, known on the internet and so on, but I don't have any idea who he is, none whatsoever, and that feels very strange, and I think, why am I doing this, you know, and I get mad, and then I'll talk about people being anonymous, and then I'll be accused of trying to out people. I must be a Jew, you know. I'm trying to get people in trouble because they have their identity discovered and so on. But I'm so glad that this has come up, and to hear Mike say this, I did hear that last night, that there's too much of this anonymity. And so if you all can do something about it, that would be wonderful. There are some people who, like I'll just say, in case somebody would be thinking it, my partner here at the White Network, Tan Stoffel, he uses a pseudonym, but he has been on the internet with that name since 2005, And he's done a lot of disclosure about himself, and even his first program here, he told people, you know, pretty much, not the exact address, but you know, where he came from, where he's located now, where, you know, what his, line of work is and so on, a lot about himself. But, I've told him myself, he said to me once, he was thinking maybe he should start, he felt a little bad about not using his name. I said, I don't think you should. I don't think you should change that because, he's got, you know, family with three children and there's just no reason for it because he's a known entity. But these people that just crop up here and there, and people are really don't know much about him, and particularly on all these, comment boards and forums, it's just kind of it's a pesty kind of a thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, the Jews do have these armies of internet disinformation agents. I think sometimes that gets tossed around a little bit too liberally, that anybody who says something you disagree with, you call them a secret Jew. But with some of these people where they just repeatedly start problems, you do have to wonder. Because, I mean, some of them have to be, just statistically, some of them have to be these Jewish disinformation type agents.
Yeah, I'm glad you used the word statistically. That's you know, I've never said it that way, but that's a good way to put it. It's true that there has to be a number of these people. So you know, you don't know which ones they are, but you can guess. yeah, it's just well, I don't know. What did you come up with any solution? You were talking about it, you said?
To the anonymity problem. I don't know that there is any solution to that. I mean, it's all up to people individually if they want to remain anonymous. I mean, some of these people will say, you know, they'll kill my family if I post on the internet about Jews, which is just crazy talk. I don't think they're killing people because of things they post on the internet. And if, you know, if the Mossad wants to assassinate you, they can find out who you are pretty easily. You know, there's not really any real anonymity on the internet when it comes to, you know, secret service type, groups, intelligence agencies. So, and this has been proven in multiple instances in court and things where they can find this stuff out. They have the ability to. So, I guess maybe people misunderstand that fact, or they're worried about their jobs. I don't know. I put myself out there. Mike does. John Friend does. There's a few other people who do, but it's pretty rare. So I don't know. I mean, you can encourage people to do it, but when you do that, you know, they do accuse you of being a Jew. So I think it's definitely up to individuals. But I mean, if people are afraid to put their real name on what they're saying, then it can't really mean that much to them.
Well, yes, you know, it's just easy. It's just easy to just click on anonymous. And, you know, sign in as anonymous or just come up with some little name. And then they change it from time to time. Okay, somebody called in and I was going to tell them I couldn't answer it. And they hung up. You know, I can't take any calls, listeners, until the second hour. I could, but the reason being that once somebody, the way our system is now, and it's just hasn't been changed, this little problem hasn't been fixed because it's very difficult to do, I guess. But, if somebody calls in, once they call and hang up, then for some reason I can't, neither one of my guests can't hear the prompts for when the break or the music or anything. And I would rather put that off until the second hour so that I do hear it for the break. And then when we get going in the second hour, that happens, then I hope, last week, on Saturday with Alex Linder, I forgot and we just talked right through the end until the music came on. So I hope this time I've got a little note for myself that I'll pay attention. So that's why the, call's in the second hour. So let's move along here, Andre. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, because I think it's not just to put you on the spot, but I think it's important, it's my opinion, that some of these things get aired out and cleared up and right out there in the open, because I think it's very instructive for all of us. And in this past week, there surfaced a phone interview that you did on a certain program somebody brought up, and this was over a year ago, but you were saying some things that you wouldn't be saying, that you wouldn't say now. And then there's also your a website that is called what is the name of it? Reality Situation.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting stuff on there. I've got some questions about some things there. I don't see anything wrong with it. It's just different, you know. And so I thought we'd start with talking about that, if you don't mind. And I'll just skip that phone interview for now and go right to the website, Reality Situation. You have made such a shift. And it's not that it's unusual for people to shift. Most everybody's done it. And I certainly have done it myself, but you've done it in a short period of time. That's the thing that was kind of surprising to me. Now, I think that the first essay I found on this, it's with the Wayback Machine. Well, I didn't look for it. Other people did, and then sent it to me, so I have this Wayback Machine view of it. And it seems to be, it's hard to tell the exact date, but it seems to me that it's February 2012 that you wrote the first essay there. Hello, I'm Andre.
February 2000, I don't know. It seems like it was longer ago than that. But
yeah, it might have been.
It has to have been longer. It has to have been sometime in 2011.
Okay, because you said you have a picture of yourself there. You say, I live in the jungle, but there's no dates on that.
Okay.
On that thing. There's, you don't know if there were at one time and they're gone, but there's none there now that I could find. So, except, the Wayback Machine seemed to show that it was from, that was today's date, February 11th, but it said 2012. I don't understand that. Anyway, the next essay you are saying, and I want to preface this by that what I discovered in reading this, what occurred to me is that you are, you tend to be an absolutist. When you are so convinced of what you are believing at the time you're believing it, that is, you speak about it in very absolute terms. You even use the word absolute a lot. You're the opposite of wishy-washy. I mean, you don't say, well, it might be this or might. No, you're like, absolutely, it's this way, you know? And that, I think, is probably the trait of people who are more likely to be in leadership positions, people who are very convinced about what they're doing. I would say that you were absolutely anti-technology and a kind of a back to nature or even a back to primitivism, not so long ago, in 2012, in the early months, say at least, or first 6 months or so, and then before that, in 2012. And then now you're absolutely fascist authoritarian. And that's a big switch, I think. So I thought, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, for me, it was not a huge switch. Because for me, what I was looking at was this natural order and the natural order of human society, which is what I was searching for, you know, because what we live in now is so against the natural order. Everything is just pressing against the natural order. So I kind of went back to zero with that of absolute nature, you know, primitive type living, and I lived that way for a couple years, actually. Mm-hmm. So when I discovered, first it happened that I realized that I could not ever really fit into that situation. there in that type of a primitive society. I'm too different biologically to those people. But when I found, you know, Mussolini and then Adolf Hitler, and I had read some of that before when I was a teenager, you know, but I'd never really understood it. But what I found when I found them is what they were doing was applying this natural order of human society onto this modern system. So for me and my personal, my mind, this was not a huge switch. Once I discovered this, it just seemed absolutely logical.
Well, it was kind of like a solution to your problem. Because, right, I can see that. Because, you know, you wanted the you understood what was wrong when we got pulled out of the natural order, but yet you couldn't really fit into a more primitive society, and, you know, that was attractive to you. And I understand, you know, I lived in Mexico for a long time. I wasn't in a primitive society like that. But, you know, when I finally left, it was because I had decided, am I going to stay here for the rest of my life? You know, and then this is not my people. This is not, you know, there are a lot of my people there, but, you know, this is not the kind of society my people make. And so if I'm going to leave, I better leave now and not, it was hard to leave, you know, because life was so easy there. And a lot of good points to it. But, so I did, and I came back, and my life was not nearly as colorful and all of that. But I was glad to be back, and of course it was the right, I think it was the right thing for me to do. Anyway, so I understand, you know, how that works, and I would say that was, you were looking for a solution, and that's where you found it. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A lot of people have said, you know, this is a huge shift. It's a 180. And for me, it really was a natural progression. And the other thing I wanted to add is that I don't think I could have come to this any other way. For me personally, I had to take this path to reach this level of understanding. I mean, maybe some people, you could just sit them down and explain these things to them. But it's you know, everything in this society is geared against you coming to the conclusions that I've come to about the kind of society that we need. And it took this going in this direction for me to be able to understand this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, you know, it seems to me that you were very much an environmentalist, of what we would call that. Maybe not in the, you know, the most popular sense of the word, but that's, you know, you were, and it wasn't that you were so much concerned with the environment, you were concerned with the people and how they lived in it. And so you were extremely anti-technology. Of course, you didn't have any power, so it was just, you know, your own feelings, and you were, you know, finding your way in what you believed. But so you wrote this essay about that and saying that there is no logical way to reconcile humanity with the technology. And that was something that you repeated quite a bit in some of these essays. And this was, like I say, probably in 2012, early part in 2012, which is not against what you said. How do you fit that in with what you are doing now?
The stuff with technology, yeah. Well, the progression of technology is the problem, and I still would say that this is a problem. The way that technology is progressing, the direction that it goes in. But so much of that has to do with this capitalist system, where you have all these different corporations trying to produce through this research and development whatever's going to make money, and this drives the development of this technological system in a very, it's almost like a path that's already laid out before anybody makes any decisions about it, because it's always whatever is going to be the most profitable that is what's going to be produced as far as the whole technology industry. And within the capitalist system, I believe that we would end up with some kind of a technological apocalypse if we just let this keep going on.
Like Atlantis. I mean, I don't know whether I believe in Atlantis, but it's very possible. And I did learn a lot about it at one time in my life. And, it was just that. It was the, drive for technology that without proper safeguards, and maybe there was a lot of competition, I'm not sure, but going on, but that was an advanced, technological society of its kind. And then it just blew everything up. There's a big catastrophe. Yeah. It could happen.
Like, at least an allegory.
Yeah.
Well, whether it's historical or not, I don't know. I think it probably could be historical, honestly.
Yeah, it could be.
Whether it is or not.
But I don't think I don't need to take a stand on it. And I'm not asking you.
That's the way I feel about it, yeah. You can see this now, the way the technology is progressing is causing a lot of social problems, I think. I mean, just the TV alone, and just like we were talking about with the computer, the way people just sit on this computer and fight with each other constantly. I mean, we're clearly getting separated from the natural order, and it's a lot of different things causing that, a lot of different social things, but... the ultimate separation appears to only be possible through this this progression of this technology. So, if you had an authoritarian type society, you could have a way to deal with this. But right now, where you just have this free for all libertarian capitalism, where it's all do your own thing, and there's no attempt to instruct people at all. I mean, I think this is just going to keep getting weirder and weirder. So, what I'm presenting as far as, you know, a fascist type system is a way to deal with that, because I think, you know, we are going to be getting into something really, really weird with this technology. When you start talking about artificial intelligence and implanting computer chips into people's brains and all of these the genetic engineering type stuff. So I haven't really talked about that on my new site, but this is still something that I'm very much aware of and that I think about. And I think that's one of the reasons why we need to reformat this entire social order.
Recently I read, I wish I had that, but I kind of don't know where it is. But one of the things was that we were going to be able, not too far in the future, this person thought, this was a scientific person, to keep people alive into really old, you know, extended ages. And what's that? What would that have to do with it? Then I guess we wouldn't have to. People wouldn't have to reproduce if people just keep living, you know? I mean, it's a totally different concept of what life is than what we're used to.
Yeah, and I think this stuff is really weird and incredibly negative. And it's almost all Jews involved in this. Ray Kurzweil is a Jew. I mean, people can look up this transhumanism, which is kind of the what's becoming a movement pushing for all of this stuff of mixing human beings with machines. It's kind of an emerging movement as this technology is coming closer, and it is a pretty Jewish type movement.
Right. It is. They're always running all of this. Well, what now? You had a whole lot of sincere feeling for some of these primitive, we'll call them primitive people. You know, you call it third world countries, but in a jungle setting, it's even more than that. And the life that they had, and that they were happy, and you kind of held that up at the time as the ideal. But then you saw it differently. Now, what should be done? How how should these people be treated? I mean, if you talk about fascism, how is that going to handle other groups in the world that aren't a part of Western civilization?
Well, it's pretty clear that these people are incapable of dealing with Western civilization. And I think this colonialism was the worst thing that's probably ever happened. Bringing this white civilization to these people who are not genetically adapted to live in it. The only other people besides whites who can apparently deal with this, well, clearly they can deal with it, are the East Asian peoples, Chinese, Japanese, and Koreans.
The Indians from the British occupation, as painful as that was, have morphed into a very modern society in a lot of ways. Now, not everywhere,
not when you go there. It's not really like that. It's really, really third world. I don't know. I think that India might have some like white genetics left over from that period where they had the caste system, and supposedly, and I think it's probably true, I'm not an expert on this area, but that it was the Brahmins were Aryan type people, so I think they have some of those genes left over, so some of the people are able to deal with it, but the majority of the Indians are not doing very well at all with this system.
Well, what should be done? What should be done about that? Separate, instead of this one worldism, actually keep a big separation between these people and let them do their thing, what I would say, and not try to run what they're doing and not try to bring them into our way of life, and not attack them and not try to steal everything out of their countries and so on. That's what
Exactly. That's my exact position, is that these people should just be left alone. They are these, Rousseau's noble savages. They really are. This is a real thing. They just lived kind of idyllic life in nature, and that's what these people have always done. We as a people have always been in a state of, development because of this logic that we have in our brains that causes us to develop and to desire more than, just the basic necessities of life. So, it's all just been a thing of trying to steal all these people's wealth, and then the Catholic Church played a big role in it that, some of them might have believed in all that stuff about saving them for Jesus. I mean, obviously a lot of them believed in it. I don't know about the upper ranks of the Catholic Church, if they held this view or not, but they at least wanted to increase their numbers by going into these countries, and they were kind of allied with the capitalist type forces that were going into these countries, and they brought them Christianity and told them to obey the church and to work for these farms that they were setting up, and all these, and then mines that they were setting up, and all these third world countries that during the colonial era, all Europe traveled to and set this up. And it's just been a very unsuccessful.
Okay. Now, in an essay entitled The Way Forward, Part 2, you wrote, "I feel that the best solution any single individual can embrace is to sell everything they own and go live in squalor in a third world country." It was kind of interesting you said go and live in squalor. And form autonomous communities geared towards self-sufficiency and a rejection of the material and spiritual slavery brought upon them by modern society. What would you say about that now? I mean, that's very Jesus-like in this, sell everything that you own and go live there. Were you influenced by that?
By Jesus?
Yes.
No, I mean, I guess we're all influenced by Jesus. This has been a pretty big part of our society for a long time, but No, I don't think in saying that there, I was thinking too much of Jesus. I still have the same value system that I had when I wrote all that stuff. It's just that I think this stuff needs to be accomplished in a different manner. But the materialism is really, it really is a spiritual disease, that's come from the Jews. This whole concept of collecting all these items and basing our worth on these material objects. This is what we see in the United States. I mean, this is all anybody cares about. And so I think that is really the core problem within our society. And
is the core problem? I was looking at why something dropped here, but maybe I wasn't paying enough attention. What did you say was the core problem?
Materialism.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry.
And the kind of the death of spirituality that we've gone through as a society.
Yeah.
And by spirituality, I'm not talking about religion, but just the concept of man as a spiritual being before a material being, and that our purpose, the purpose of our existence, is a spiritual purpose, rather than that we're just a combination of atoms that doesn't really have any particular purpose other than to
What would our spiritual purpose be? I mean, to each one spiritually find, you know, spiritual enlightenment or spiritual fulfillment. Is what kind of religious discipline would you put this under? Like something Eastern or something Western or some higher level of Christianity or what?
Well, I think it could be any of those things, really. I mean, I think the particular religion is more of just a platform for achieving meaning in your life, and that's all just been pushed off onto all this obsession with these material objects. I don't know about a specific religion, and that's kind of one of the debates that's really causing a lot of problems right now. So I don't know specifically about which religion would be best for that. It seems like they all worked historically, and now none of them do.
Well, what would you say in a fascist society that you would like to create, say, in the United States, or, you know, whatever? It's hard to imagine it at this point, looking at what we have, but what would you imagine the spirituality would be? Or is that just another thing you don't want to have?
Well, that would be a big thing to talk about. I think we need a unified spiritual purpose, to our society, which, like you say, it's difficult to imagine now, and I'm still formulating it in my own mind, but that's clear that we need a unified spiritual purpose and an idea of who we are as spiritual beings that we share.
Okay, now in another essay on this old site of yours, Situation Reality, it is about Ron Paul and the what you call the Loverution, Ron Paul Loverution.
That's what Ron Paul called it.
Oh, okay. I missed that. I quit paying too much. I was a big fan of Ron Paul four years ago. I mean, the earlier time around, and then this time I didn't pay too much attention.
Yeah. David Duke was a big fan of that, too. But no, the signs that they made revolution, and then the EVOL, they flipped it around so it said love, so it was like a revolution of love and free market capitalism.
Okay, well, you say that's just absolute nonsense, and you make some points. Politics are not real, you say. And you say the system benefits by deferring all discontent back into proved nonsense, such as politics, where people waste their time in fantasy world created by the television rather than engage reality. Well, that fits. Then you say the sophistication of propaganda makes free choice impossible. What are you doing?
I was just coming inside.
Oh, okay. All right. I got it. All right. The sophistication of propaganda makes free choice impossible.
That's an important point.
Yeah. And then following that, well, the last one is that Ron Paul's solutions actually don't make any logical sense. For example, replacing the Federal Reserve with the Rothschild control gold, which is true. So you want to talk about that third one, that free choice is impossible? And so that still fits,
yeah.
Right, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think all this stuff fits. I mean, it's a big issue. It's hard to explain how it all fits together, you know. But, yeah, the issue of propaganda, this goes back to that thing with technology. This is a I was very big into this philosopher from France whose name is Jacques Ellul, E-L-L-U-L.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a book called Propaganda, and this is a science, and they're able to do this, these advertisers and the government, anybody who wants to promote anything is able to send these messages through this propaganda, through the television and everything else, now the internet, in such a way that it bypasses people's conscious minds and speaks directly to their subconscious minds. So they're actually implanting thoughts into people's brains. This is what's happening in our society. This is why when you talk to people, they just repeat this kind of nonsense that somebody's told them. And you're like, you listen to them and it's like, well, do you actually believe this? And it's that they don't really have any choice. These media are speaking directly to their subconscious minds and putting these thoughts into their brains. So a good example is this Christian movement which supports Israel. They have 24-hour networks of these preachers that are paid by the Jews. Some of them are actually Jews themselves claiming to be Christian converts, where they just drill this into your brain about this, you know, that Israel is this fulfillment of prophecy, and that, I mean, you know, everybody knows the whole story of Christian Zionism. And this is something which didn't exist 100 or 150 years ago. It's just something they've invented, and they just use this media to push this into people's minds.
Well, how is that? I'm sorry, finish. Well, I was going to say, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say the whole political thing is the same deal, where they're putting this into people's minds, where it's supposed to somehow make sense that, you know, Barack Obama does the exact same thing as George Bush did, only worse. But this is somehow a free choice democracy, and the people are making the decisions.
Well, how is it different with the fascism that you envision? Because, and even in the National Socialist system, the argument is that there's no choice. People have no choice, and they are given in the schools and so on, just like all schools are. You know, they're going to be taught a certain kind of beliefs, and that's what they're going to accept and not be able to really question, because that's what they learn from childhood, and everybody believes the same thing. So it's really just exchanging one set of beliefs for another, but you're still not allowing people to just do their own thing. That's like libertarianism, and that's why that is so popular. And so many people feel comfortable there because they like to think that they can just look around and read all these different things and listen to all these different things and then make up their own mind. And then you have people with every kind of variety of opinion and degree, which doesn't really work for what we think we need to do to solve the problem of the of white society surviving. Right?
Yeah. I don't think people are capable of making their own decisions. Now, I mean, this is what all this proves, that they're not really capable of making their own decisions. Even if you didn't have all of this propaganda, we are biologically designed, human beings are, to follow leaders, to form collectives and to follow leaders. So, the difference would be replacing the fundamental values of society and gearing them towards something that's healthy rather than something that's just as destructive as this Jewish international capitalism.
Well, that's very well put. And so it's about power, too. We have to hide away or veer away from the idea of power, because you have to have power. And then when you have it, then you put your ideas in place. And because you think your ideas are better than the other ideas. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so right now we don't have power. We've lost power so much. And we're seen as totally wrong. So this is what has to change. But I think we need to be clear about it. And if we have so many of our people spouting all kinds of weird things and being rather confused about what really is at stake here, not so much what's at stake, but what works and how to go about it. I don't know. There's a constant debate going on. And then there are people who come in on this, on these exchanges of views that are so popular on the internet. And it's, a lot of it is going on in your site, which I forgot even to mention, Total Fascism at www.totalfascism.com. But there's actually a lot of interesting commentary going on there. But then what I notice is the people who will always interject something to create doubt, another opinion or another idea. And a lot of their things they say are not factual, and they throw them in there, and then people start arguing about that, or not arguing, but, you know, taking a position. And you're talking about things that aren't even correct to begin with. So this really gets, I don't know what the answer, I think probably just moderation. And you can't moderate all that, so.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I do skim the comments. I need to get a little bit more fascist with the comments section, but I don't really have time to go through and read. I mean, there's like more than 100 comments a day there now, so. Mm. It would be a pretty big thing to go through all of them. I don't know how much that really even matters, all these people saying all this stuff. What I was going to try and do is put it so you have to click through to make a comment and see the comments, so I can just have my articles on a page without all the comments below them, and then if people want to click to a separate page where all the comments can be, I'm going to try and set that up sometime this week, so it looks like that, because I think a lot of people probably aren't interested in these comment sections, but in some ways it's good for people to be able to go through and exchange back and forth. I mean, I guess.
I just mean that there's people who seems like what they're putting on there is purposefully to disrupt having the comment, the people commenting, having it be anything worthwhile, because they just keep disrupting it in one way or another. And I've seen a few particular people who do that. So
like
that's kind of education in itself. I suppose you can't stop that. But people need to recognize it. They need to look at it and see who's doing it. Now, let's move on here. There's another essay that you wrote in this earlier website, which has gotten quite a bit of attention, and that is Christianity as Psychological Warfare. Jesus was weak. And people have brought that up and said, aha, now you're speaking, you're talking in favor of Christianity, or you're being nice about Christianity, and here you are very much against it. You're not, you know, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth and so on. So,
yeah.
But you can comment on that. And then one thing you said here I thought was very good. You said, Let me make a few statements about the introduction of the Christian doctrine among conquered people. So there again, you are concerned with the conquered people. And you said more accurately, people in the process of being conquered, as without religion, it is impossible to ever fully conquer a people. I thought that was a pretty good insight that you made there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I do see all these issues with Christianity. I mean, I've never, I don't think that article that I wrote that I was pushing Christianity or telling people to accept Christianity. I tried to be as neutral as possible. I posted another short thing today, kind of trying to clear that up, but it just does, it seems like a waste of time. So I do absolutely understand the issues that people take with Christianity. But the fact of the matter is that we've had this in our society for a very long time, and a lot of people are not interested in letting go of that, and I don't see that it's helpful to constantly attack these people. I mean, that's my position on Christianity, and these people are posting about, well, we need Odin. And I wrote this thing today, just a short thing, and I said, you know, if you have this plan for Odin, why don't you present it to us? I'm interested in hearing about your plans to bring back Odin. And I'm not even being sarcastic when I say that. I'm actually interested in hearing them. But are we going to put on robes and go sacrifice goats in fields? I've not seen a working model of how you would reintroduce Odin into society, whereas you can see what the NSDAP did with Christianity, or what they were in the process of doing. They kind of got interrupted, as it were. But Rosenberg, who did consider himself a pagan, was supportive of this move to kind of transform Christianity into something that they thought was better for the people. So I guess what I'm saying is that option needs to be left open, because I don't really see trying to establish a new religion at this point in time as making a lot of sense. And with the Odin thing, again, I'm open to this kind of stuff. I think this old religion was very good in a lot of ways. And one thing you have to say about it is it had basically the same value system as Christianity, except that I think in a lot of ways you just have to admit that Christianity has made us weaker.
Yeah. All right. The way I see this is that when you were writing this stuff, you were still concerned with these people and the more primitive peoples, and not exploiting them and not coming in and destroying them with stuff that didn't fit with the way they thought and what they could think, and so you saw Christianity and the West in a much harsher light, and now you're trying to work within the West and within our societies and do something different with it. So therefore, you do have a different point of view. I can see that. I can understand that very well. You did say something in this one that I thought showed maybe ignorance, I don't know why you wrote it this way. You said, thus the image of the warrior is replaced with the image of a man, you mean Jesus, who ran from his enemies, was caught, tortured, and murdered in the most brutal and humiliating way, leaving his followers to be hunted down and killed by their enemies. Well, he did not run from his enemies. That's what he didn't do. And he let himself be arrested. That was supposedly, you know, in the story, the plan that his divine inner voice told him to what to do, and that's what he did. He just didn't, you know, fight back. So he wasn't running. But anyway, that's just a little.
Well,
point.
He did slip away. I mean, that's kind of the story of the New Testament, is him slipping away from the Jews that were chasing
him.
At
times he did that. Well, but just
not,
like
in
anybody.
In the end,
would.
He did surrender himself to death, but. You know, I am not trying it's still a pretty valid point that we do have this history. Every people had a warrior hero, and that when you replace the warrior hero with the image of this man on a cross, it does something to you psychologically. That doesn't necessarily mean that Christian society is weak, but I mean, you can understand what I'm saying, mm-hmm. that you have this image of what a human being, the ultimate achievement of a man, and you take something like Thor and
Thor also gave up, so to speak. I mean, he said, you know, my time is over. I don't have all that clear, but there are different stories where, you know, the death of the gods. I mean, they you know, so there, and I don't really see the story of I don't really see Christ on the cross. When I think of what the Christian message is, I more think of the turn the other cheek thing, which is kind of misunderstood, you know, as to the meaning of it, because it meant for your own people, supposedly, you know, not for enemies. But
the whole thing is pretty unclear as far as the actual Bible itself, because you have this kind of revolutionary Christ who's flipping over tables and slapping people in the temple, and then you have him telling people to turn the other cheek, and then you have him telling to sell everything you own and buy a sword.
Yeah, so that's where you can just interpret it, and you brought that up. You can just interpret it, and people do interpret it in so many different ways. Well, we're going to our break now, and so hang on, Andre. Don't hang up. We will take calls when we get back, and we're going to have our new song coming up. So I hope you enjoy it. It's Frank Renicki with Helden Gedenken.
Im Westen und Osten, sie liegen in aller Welt, und ihre Helme verrosten und Kreuz und Hügel zerfällt. Sie liegen verscharrt und versunken im Massengrab und im Meer, aber es leben Halunken und die ziehen noch über sie her. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätte und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätte und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Sie waren nicht ausgezogen um Beute und schnöden Gewinn, was heute verlacht und verlogen, es hatte für sie einen Sinn. Sie hatten ihr junges Leben nicht weniger lieb als sie. Heute Höhnen es hinzugeben sei reine Idiotie. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon stark. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon stark. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Musik. demonstrieren, mehr Freizeit bei höherem Lohn. Sie mussten ins Feld marschieren, der Vater, der Bruder, der Sohn. Sie gingen die Heimat zu schützen und haben allen entsagt, was kann uns der Einsatz nützen, hat keiner von ihnen gefragt. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit und welche Erbärmlichkeit.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, that was Frank Reneke with Helden Gedenken. And my guest, this is Carolyn Yeager on the Heretics Hour. My guest is Andrew Anglin of TotalFascism.com. And this, Andre, this is, he goes by, we call him Andre. This is real fitting with what you want to be, you are talking about, and you are wanting this. You missed that when I talked about this song in the beginning of the program. It means thoughts of heroes, Helden Gedenken, something like that. And it is about the, you know, fighting men, fighting for their homeland and their people. And this is, you know, in this one of your later essays in this older website of yours, you said that you don't think that we're meant to produce and consume products, that we are spiritual beings who are meant to find meaning beyond the physical world and have social interaction with each other and a connection to the natural world. So how do you put all that together if you want to with the idea of heroes? And we were just talking about the image of Christ as being not quite the image that we want, but that doesn't mean that's the only image of Christ we can use, you know. It's just the one that has become most used.
Yeah, it's become the dominant image of Christ, and I don't think that's a coincidence, but I mean, you can look at like the Irish Catholics, with the kind of fight that they put up with Christianity as their basis. And I mean, you can look at just even the Crusades, and I mean, clearly you can draw strength from this religion. It is definitely possible. So,
you know, I saw somebody sent me just not too long ago, probably yesterday or something, but a short video of a news video in which Golden Dawn members there. Oh, they had one of their Greek Orthodox priests there blessing a new. You know, a new what do they call that when the political party opens up a new little place where, you know, people can come and they can do things. Anyway, he was blessing it. They were all lined up there, these big strong guys, and, you know, doing the signs and everything. And, you know, it looks very nice. I mean, you might think it's a bunch of hocus pocus, but it pulls people together. There's a unifying thing, and it pulls it together with the society. And that's why probably a lot of them go along with it, even if whether they believe it or not. I can't say whether they do. They probably do. But, you know, because they know that this is the faith of their people, and they're all participating in this together. It's can be very unifying.
Yes, exactly. And that's a good point that people that are fixated on attacking Christianity should recognize that the Golden Dawn is using this, and they're actually doing this in real life. They're not They're not sitting around on the internet fighting with each other anonymously. These people are actually out on the streets getting things done, and they are using the Christian system for this. They're not trying to reinvent their whole spirituality. You know, in Sweden, I guess they are more pushing for a doing away with Christianity, because they have that. I guess a lot of people in Scandinavia have a closer connection to that old pagan style religion. But yeah, Golden Dawn is, I mean, it's hard to say these people are weak.
Right. Right. They're not. It doesn't have to be. So this is all theoretical stuff people are pushing, and I don't know. I'll just leave this here. And I'd like to segue with this idea of heroes into talk a little bit about vegetarianism. I don't know that you want to talk about that, but I do. And there's been this has aroused. You know, I mentioned that one of the worst things that the biggest mistake Hitler made was becoming a vegetarian. And boy, did that start up a lot of stuff. In fact, I'm still getting things, comments about it, and they're telling me how ignorant I am. Now, there was an article here in the Telegraph that just came out yesterday, in UK Telegraph, about this supposed food taster who's now 95 years old, a female, who was one of Hitler's, they say, 12 or so, I don't know, I thought I saw something where there was quite a number of them, big group, who were his food tasters to make sure that his food wasn't poisoned. And that they make it sound like she was forced to go there. They, you know, her husband was in the SS and at the Eastern Front, and they just took her to the headquarters there where Hitler was on the Eastern Front. And a bunch of other women were there. They are this team of food tasters. And she was actually saying that, yes, all his food was vegetarian. It was all very fresh and nice. Well, there's no controversy about that. That I know of. But I don't believe that he had these women tasting his food. I believe that's a total story, and this stupid old woman is going along with it. And, you know, because so many Germans became anti-Hitler after the war. They weren't before the war, during the war or before, but once it was all over and everything changed, they found it best to go along with it, and they even imagined, some of them probably, that they didn't go along.
Yeah, that goes with that. That goes with that propaganda thing. I mean, that was the psychological warfare department, where they faked all those photographs, and then the skin lampshades and shrunken
right.
heads. That was the U.S. psychological warfare department. We still have that now, obviously.
Yeah, well, they talked these people into it. Into believing,
yeah.
That was also
well,
bad.
I read actually on Google. I should show people on my website how to do this. You can look up old newspaper archives, and you can look all this stuff up based on keywords. Google has scanned all these old newspapers, and you can look this stuff up. And I found an article from 1946, I guess, where they were making all these Germans go into these movie theaters and see these faked photographs of all these alleged horror events. And it says that the Germans were all laughing at these movies that they were showing of these horrors, because none of them could believe it was real, because it just seemed so silly and ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, they got a hardcore,
you know, since you called in, my Skype page changed to a conference call, like, and I don't have my old one where I can accept a phone call. Where that place is, I can't find it here. It's not here. I'm afraid to get rid of this one. I don't have another one. It took it over. As we were saying that they did something here. Somebody had called, but now they've hung up. But I wasn't able. I've been looking around here. I wasn't able to answer it. So I don't know. I'm afraid to mess with anything here. So we might not be able to take any phone calls. That's really a shame.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You can't switch windows without closing that one.
Well, I don't know. There isn't any other window. This is Skype. This is the Skype thing. If I can't. Let me get my contacts. No, there's not even. It won't even show my contacts. It won't show anything. I don't know. If I click on Skype, I just still have this. There's nothing. There's nothing changing. What a mess. What things they do. I wonder if Tan is listening, he might be able to tell me something to do. I don't know what. If I go to, I don't want to waste his time with this. So that is really, some people probably like to give their views on vegetarianism. Well, let me just continue with this a little bit, and then I'll let you talk, and I'll try to see what I can do.
Okay.
Yeah, she... And then they use articles like this to add a bunch of junk, like Hitler's terrible table manners. You know, I've read this before. Some supposedly they say in a secret diary, one German soldier wrote something. And this is some of this old propaganda. You know, he bites his fingernails. He runs his finger under his nose. And, you know, his table manners are just shocking. Absolutely not true. And anyway, this, they say that that's about all there is with that. Okay, vegetarianism. Let me say that the people who were the doctors that were attending Hitler, you know, Hitler's health really was okay until the late 30s. He always imagined he had problems. You know, he had some stomach problems, and then he imagined that they were more serious because he was always felt, I guess, a little bit fearful that he would get cancer like his mother did because it might have run in the family or something. So he believed in fixing things with diet, which was very good. And he was always somewhat of an meat eater. Well, here's this person again, but I can't. All right, somebody ringing. I can't answer it. I did have it until you called in, and then this one other page came up, and now everything else is gone. Well, anyway, so he had this, if anybody is a Skype contact with us, they could, if they have a Skype contact, they can call in via Skype, but if they're not, they can't do that. So, but both his doctor, Carl Brandt, who is his doctor from fairly early on, even before he became chancellor, was his personal surgeon. And then from 1944, Ludwig Stumpfeger was his personal surgeon. And I've read in some of these books by the people who are close to Hitler. I didn't get this information, but I remember it, that they both advised him later on to add some meat to his diet because they thought that that was a big part of what his digestive problems were. His diet wasn't sufficient. And he got very angry at Brandt and sent him away. Let's see. All right, I got it now. I got it back now. I got this little message. Okay,
good.
I'm going to take this call. The first one, 17202. All right, but he didn't want to do it. Let's see if this guy comes on. Now he's gone. Now the other one is still ringing, so I'll try taking the other one. What the heck? Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Ohio.
Okay, you've got some background noise there, pretty bad.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm on the road. I just want to say it's been a good show already, and
hey,
it was
Mike.
Nice getting. This is Mike Delaney.
Yeah, I kind of thought
hey,
so.
Hey, Mike. Hey, how's it going? It was good to meet you out there tonight. I've been listening to your show on the road here. Good things, man. Good things. And I just wanted to drop by and say hi and be a caller on here for, I guess, for a second. Nothing else too much.
Hey, Mike, are you a vegetarian?
No, I'm not, but I see the merit in it. That's certainly one of my huge weaknesses is my dietary habits. As far as things go with my children and other issues, I'm pretty disciplined on some things. But when it comes to dietary, I know quite a bit. I don't follow what I know, you know. So that's why I don't speak too much on it.
Yeah, it's hard, man. It takes a lot of effort.
Right. And yeah. I'm just going to continue to tune it in here. And, like I said, for those of you who don't know, I got to meet Andre tonight right before you got on the show, actually. And it was good to meet you, man. And keep on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, it was
okay.
Good to meet you, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, Mike.
Good night.
All right.
Okay, well, that was that call. He hung up. Now, I've got the page back. So people can call. Now, here's somebody. All right. All right.
Yeah, Mike is he's a very real guy. I want to say that. It's good to meet people in real life, and he's absolutely comes across exactly as he presents himself. He's got four real beautiful children and a very sweet wife. He's a very good guy.
Oh, he's 100%. He's 100%, and he keeps busy. He does more than most people, for sure. More five other people. So, okay, hello caller. What is your what name do you want to give, and where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Ohio, and usually go by the name of Bill.
Well, hi, Bill.
Hi, Carolyn. I think we've spoken. Hey there, Andre. We've spoken maybe once or twice on RBN, and I like to listen to your interviews as much as I can. They're always have a lot of good information. So I wanted to just make a point and a statement, if I could, something that I didn't get a chance. I'm going back and I'm listening to the Linder tape now, and he obviously is very, very anti-Christian, which to me is sort of a dead giveaway, as the tribe is known to be. If you go back and you look at history, I think there's been roughly 108, 109 expulsions of these people. And oddly enough, they were all evicted by force with their ill-gotten wealth confiscated from Catholic or Orthodox countries. Never once has there been a Protestant nation, unless you want to call Germany a Protestant nation, which it really wasn't. It was probably split about half and half. Hitler, of course, was a Catholic. How Linder and how these other clowns can seemingly forget this so trivial fact is absolutely beyond me. Now, the reality is...
Okay, Bill, are you trying to argue for Catholicism? We don't want to get into that particular kind of discussion.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am, Carolyn. I am a proud traditional Catholic. I'm a practicing traditionalist. But I don't advocate it necessarily over all others. My race is important to me. My heritage, my German Italian heritage, all of those things are vital and crucial to me. I don't like to have my religion mocked. I don't like to have the facts mocked.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we understand that. And you want to say something to
well,
Andre?
I don't want you
to give a speech. Okay.
I'm not going to. But look now at what's going on in Greece. Greece is showing the world. Now Greece, they are unified in their faith, which is Greek Orthodox. Of course, to me, it seems as though the Jews have managed through their divide and conquer to create this sort of heterodox, heterogeneous community, and they fractured us.
You made your point, Bill. You made your point. Let Andre say what he wants to say about that.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to have him address it.
Okay.
The 109 expulsions. Go ahead, Andre.
Look, I'm not trying to attack Christianity, and I understand this position. I mean, it's it is what it is, man. Yeah, this is what I've defended Christianity. I've said, that I
think we need to be more open to this and not just simply attack Christianity and call it Jewish constantly, because you're right, they have expelled people a bunch of times. They've stood up to the Jews a lot. I'm not trying to argue an anti-Christian point here. I don't know if you're trying to have an argument here.
No, Bill is trying to say that that anti-Christian people are Jews. Now, I don't go along with that.
I'm calling Lindner.
I don't, Bill.
Lindner, I'm calling him a Jew. He's a crypto.
He's not a Jew.
He is. He's a crypto. Anyone that promotes the anti-Christian bias that he does.
Say that anybody who is anti-Christian is a crypto Jew. There are a lot of people who just don't like it. I don't like that severe anti-Christian attitude. I think it's really pointless and harmful, but that doesn't mean they're a Jew. Okay, I'm gonna say goodbye, Bill. I think you made your message. Thanks very much. And this shows, Andre, just how, you know, as we already know, how vociferous this gets.
I know. I mean, I agree with that guy's points about Christianity kicking the Jews out of countries. I don't have any, and you know, it's just there's no way to be neutral and just present kind of a pragmatic position on this for most of these people. They get too emotional about it.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, you know, very divisive. It's very, very divisive. I said some time back that Christianity was the most divisive element in the white nationalist movement, if you want to call it that. And somebody got mad at me for saying that. I think it is. Anyway, now we're getting divisive over vegetarianism. Now, you know, I don't hate vegetarianism. I'm not against vegetarianism. I was a vegetarian for a while, and I didn't have any
problems
with it.
I was also. I had a. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Go ahead. Give your.
No, I had a girlfriend in high school, and I was a vegetarian for a while. I think it makes you feel tired. Supposedly, you can take a whole bunch of supplements and something that you can make it so you're not tired all the time. But I find that it makes you tired. I am a pretty big supporter of animal rights. I think this is horrible. This factory farming industry and all of this is just, it's just terrible what they do to these animals in these factory farms.
Well, it is. And you know, when you think about, I mean, when was this? In the 70s when they Diet for a Small Planet, you know, I read that. I was all into that. And that makes a lot of sense, you know, that we should have a diet like that. But this diet is not very good for us. And people say it is, but, it actually is, some people do better with it than others. I'm a very, very much one of these hunter gatherer types, you know, the A type and so on. And I found that, once I got older, that I really needed meat to keep me from getting tired, you know, and I'm a big fan of very rare beef now, but I understand that with all the people in the world, this is a huge amount of animals that need to be raised and slaughtered. And it is a kind of a shameful, horrible thing. I don't know what the answer to it is. I think more people should hunt wild game and people shouldn't eat such huge amounts of it, meat maybe, but they like it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe there would be a synthetic alternative at some point. I don't believe there is right now. Soy is basically a poison.
Oh, it's horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, it's not safe at all.
Oh.
I mean, in America, if we closed our borders and ejected all of these foreigners, we'd have plenty of land to raise beef and chickens in the natural traditional way, as well as start reforesting. I mean, I'm pretty big into this concept of permaculture. I don't know if you know what that is.
Bill, you better explain it.
Well, Bill Mollinson, I think is how you say his name. I can't think of it right now. I think his name's Bill Mollinson. But it's called permaculture. If people type that in to Google, they'll pull this guy up. He was the main promoter of it. He based it on something that a Japanese guy did a lot of research on this, but it's creating agriculture systems that are in balance with the planet itself, and it includes trees and vegetables and fruits and then the animals, and you have a system. You create artificially what amounts to a natural ecosystem that produces food. And I think this is what needs to replace the traditional, well, the industrial farming system, because this is just horrible for the environment. It's cruel what they do to these animals. I mean, the amount of pollution that's produced by all of this is just, it's ridiculous. I mean, you have these, like the patriot type people talking about how all this environmentalism is some kind of a conspiracy. And it's just like, well, go look at this. Look at what's happening. They cut down, like, I don't know the exact number right now, but in the last 50 years, it's something like 50% of the world forests have been cut down. And then they say, oh, this is because of the population boom, but it's not really. It has a lot more to do with capitalism and these big agro-industrial businesses maximizing profit over environmental care as well as jobs. I mean, if you redid the way that farming is done, it would produce all these jobs, and it would increase the whole health of the nation. So that's something that I feel very strongly about, that we need to redo the entire way that we produce food.
The food industry is one of the worst. And you know, I don't think we should be so anti-corporate that we just hate all business and think it's all evil, because it isn't, and we need business and we need business people. But some of these corporations are like Monsanto. Well, there's really a bunch of them, but you have to just point to the ones that really are trying to take over the whole damn world, along with the whole globalism thing. And they are truly evil. And, that's what we don't want. Now, getting back to, well, let's see if there was anything more about that. Did you want to say more about that? About the,
well, let me say something what you just said about business. I think business needs to be controlled by the state. I think that all these major corporations need to be nationalized, and if not fully controlled by the state, they need to be broken down into multiple competing organizations. And really, I mean, I don't agree with the kind of guiding principles of Chinese society as they stand right now, but the economic model that they've set up shows that these same types of fascist principles that were developed 100 years ago can be applied right now. I mean, the Chinese economy, that's a whole big discussion, but the Chinese economy is very, very similar to what the fascists in Europe did 100 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one thing you have to do is you have to make everybody serve the nation. You have to, that's what Hitler was doing, and he managed to convince these people pretty well. You know, they were still business people, and you have to have a good business sense to be successful at it. But you don't have to be a greedy bastard, you have to be serving the nation. That's what has to be behind both the business people and the others. I don't know that I would want to nationalize everything and have that has not proven to work out too well.
You can't do it the communist way, but
no, you have to be in business for yourself. To be have the motivation to do it and to do it well. If you're not in it for yourself, if you're just running, you know, a state manager, you don't do a very good job, and that's what happens to this. So even you know, in any state, that would happen. But back to this, if you don't mind, back to this diet, because you know, we're talking about they talk about Adolf Hitler, and they talk about National Socialism and how this vegetarian diet is noble. It's a part of the higher spiritual man, and we wouldn't want to. How can you reach higher spiritual levels if you're eating flesh and so on? Well, you know, how spiritual do we want to get? We don't want to get so spiritual that we're wanting just sit on a mountaintop and and not, you know, live in the real world. So I used to be that way. Some, I thought I would end my life that way, you know, in full enlightenment. I did a lot of spiritual work, but I found myself now doing this totally different and liking it very much. But the whole thing is with the carbs, and in a vegetarian diet, it's a high carb diet, and you can't supply, there's a lot you can do to get protein, but mostly it's using protein powder, I think. And that gets a little bit expensive for people too. But David Duke promotes this low carb diet. That's the right diet. That's what I believe in now. And if you have a low carb diet, what you need is a high protein, high fat diet with very few carbohydrates, which is very different from most people's, you know, the traditional diet all over Europe and United States too. And it's hard for people to go on this, but I think you get really superior health from this and lots of energy. At least I do now. I couldn't, if I eat carbs, I'm just done in. I can't handle it, but that's because my blood sugar, doesn't function, you know, ideally, anymore, and probably never did, but, ideally. But there you have, it's really, we have to figure out a way how to be able to have this better diet. And this is our old hunter-gatherer diet, you know? We hunted meat, yes. We ate all the fat, we ate every part of the animal just about, and used the rest for, you know, clothing and our dwellings and so on. And then we had, we didn't ever eat grains. We had, greens, and we had fruits that we found. They're all wild stuff and roots and things that you found. And, but the grain diet, the high grain diet is not good for us. And this has been shown in all kinds of medical, research and so on. So it's not anything, new, and there are more and more people getting, you know, becoming aware of it. So for that, we're at this point, we require meat, poultry or fish, and there's nothing like red meat. You can't just always just eat chicken or fish. You wouldn't be as well off, as healthy. So, but I understand that the part about the animals, but I think, you know, I have made the point that if we talk about the natural order, Andre, the natural order is that everything lives off everything else, you know, and this is a part of the trade-off that we all understand. We just have to treat these animals with respect.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I don't know if I'm totally a member of what they call it, the paleo cult, but I absolutely support the concept of a low carb, what do they say, 40-40-20, protein, fat, carbohydrates. I probably don't keep that up right now because kind of enjoy eating bread and stuff.
Well, but, you don't have to at your think age. It is
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing, but the paleo type diet is I think it's the most healthy, absolutely. You know, you do need a certain percentage of carbs. I think these people sometimes go a little bit overboard, because there were a lot of root, vegetables that people ate in these days, you know, in the Paleolithic age is where they get that paleo diet. There were a lot of root vegetables that amounted to basically starchy carbohydrates.
They were
something of a staple.
But you know, in my mind, you can eat all these vegetables, even though they have a number of carbohydrates, but they're not like, and potatoes, which are a real staple for Germans, but still they're not very good for you. Potatoes and grains and that kind of stuff, which is almost like pure starch and a different kind of starch, and then a lot of sugary stuff. That's what you can't handle. But when you're young, you can handle all that stuff. I slowly changed my diet in order to feel better. Now, back to Hitler, he thought that he felt better if he had the slightest bit of meat, he got a stomach ache. I don't believe he did. But, you know, I got a note here that in 1943, Marlene von Exner became his dietitian, and supposedly she, this could be a story, I don't know, but she added bone marrow to his soups without his knowledge because she hated his vegetarian diet. Well, I hope she did. You know, that's really good for you. There's so many good things you can get. That was Alex Linder. I was talking about eating, making broth out of bones with, and these people were all trying to, you know, get him to not do this. And then he said that, he got annoyed with this other cook who was, Kumel, who was trying to add animal broth and fat without his knowing it to his meals, but said he noticed it and he got annoyed and in the end, he would only let her cook him clear soup and mashed potato. Well, how can you can't live on something like that.
No.
So anyway, that's my answer to all these critics who are telling me that, you know, that if you eat meat, you know, you're not going to, that this is against the new National Socialist man or something that they're envisioning.
Well, it's really hard to if you're going to the gym at all. I can't imagine not eating meat or at least eggs and dairy products. I mean, I think it's if you're eating eggs and dairy products, you wouldn't have to eat meat. I don't know. I guess Hitler was a pretty strict vegetarian, but
he ate eggs. He always ate eggs.
Well,
yeah,
if you're eating,
but that just. Go ahead.
If you're eating eggs, you don't need, I don't know if you need, I mean, eggs are a very, very good protein, so.
They are. Perfect protein.
Yeah, so, I mean, if people eat eggs and, you know, I like yogurt a lot, that's a very good source of fat and protein.
Well, it doesn't have that much protein, but it's actually kind of high in carbs. Some dairy stuff is. But like I say, when you're young and healthy, you don't have to get rid of all your carbs. Anyway.
I don't have, I guess to kind of conclude this, I don't have much interest at all in vegetarianism. I don't understand why anybody would really think that was a good idea at this point in time.
Well, they think it's more noble. There's been all these comments written. It's the higher man, which is going to be the which they see as the fascist or national socialist higher level being of the future, they think they're going to live. They're going to be vegetarians and going to be these big fighters and heroes and so on. It doesn't make sense to me. It sounds like it's so influenced by Eastern thinking.
Yeah, I think that might just be John Allen Martinson spamming with different names on there. Because I saw some of that in the comment section on my site, if that's what you're talking about, or people talking about that other places.
Yeah, well, but most of what I've noticed it is on your site now, but I've been getting it myself, too. So
yeah, I don't know about what John Allen Martinson, you know, he says that Aryan doesn't mean white, that we're all going to be Aryans when we're vegetarians and we have a multicultural, I mean, he's into some pretty different type stuff, so, I mean, I wouldn't put too much on that.
No, I should probably not pay any more attention to it. You know, I've got so many things to do, I shouldn't be spending my time in these little arguments, but you get started. And then it just keeps, you can't get away from it. I guess that's enough for that. I have a few examples, but that's kind of a personal thing for me, I guess. So of, people taking comments out of, and changing it from what you say by just leaving out one word or adding something or putting it in quotes or whatever when it wasn't, or, you know, changing little things around and then saying, making that as like a quote that you've made. And these are some of the tricks that these people do. And people should be aware of these tricks. Now, I see a detail. I'm a real detail person. So I'm sure that a lot of people who aren't going to ever notice this kind of thing and going to think it's ridiculous to care about it that much. But you see the kind of tricks that they play. Well, Andre, that's about it with what I wanted to bring up with you. Oh, I didn't get to the radio interview. Okay, let's do that radio interview because people are going to say things about it. And I'm, you know, I want you to, you have already explained it in an essay on your site.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you just hear, how do you explain some of the things you said? Like it started out, and this was a little over a year ago. So it wasn't that long ago. Jews are genetically bred to be more intelligent. Of course, they are ruining, they are running everything. And then you also said they were, after saying you have a lot of Jewish friends, you said they are smarter than us. Now, you said you weren't, you were under the influence during this interview, but still.
Yeah, I was not sober, and I didn't, I'd had quite a few drinks, and I didn't know it was being recorded, but, clearly Jews are intelligent. Are they more intelligent than us? I don't know. They allegedly have higher IQs.
Says they are. They have higher IQs, and they certainly appear more intelligent overall. But they're a smaller number, so you know they're able to help one another more.
Well, I don't think the intelligence is exactly why they're so successful. I think that's a part of it, but probably not that big of a part of it. It has more to do with the way they work with each other, and that they'll constantly support each other, and that they can just recognize each other, and that they don't lie to each other. I think we might have said last time about that movie Defamation, where the Jew goes and interviews those other Jews, and they're all just real straightforward with them because they have something where they don't lie to each other. So I think it's more complicated than just intelligence, but I think they probably do have a higher IQ than the average white person. I mean, I don't know what that means exactly, but it seems to be the case. But go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And then talking about blacks, well, I know that, you know, at that time still you had more sympathy with blacks. You know, you have sympathy with the primitive people of the third world and so on. And you said things, you know, well, I hear you say, when did blacks become a part of this society? When was this choice ever made? This system is designed to seduce them. It's not their own fault. What do you expect a person to do in that situation? And then you say, right after that, why should black people be forced into this system? They were never going to invent this system. Well, and then there's some more, but you know, you're kind of sympathizing with the blacks. The thing is, they shouldn't be here, but they are here, and now what? So,
well, I mean, yeah, I would still agree with what I said there. I mean, I don't think blacks ever would have invented this system. I mean, clearly these people were living in the jungle, and they would have stayed doing what they were doing for how many thousands of years they were doing it if they wouldn't have been interrupted in their business. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, to look at this realistically, you have to be able to understand the position of black people. They're not designed to live in this white man society. They clearly do not do very well here. I mean, you can say, well, they were historically oppressed and all this, but what about the last, you know, 50 or 60 years when they've had opportunities? They don't have to live like they do, but they're just not adapted to function within this white system.
A lot of them aren't and don't, but what about all the ones now who have white blood, and some of them quite a bit of it, and they're much more adapted, and they're happy here, and they would never want to leave and go back to what they were, and they wouldn't even fit in because they're not all black anymore. So, you know, we've done that. This is what this race mixing creates, huge problems that we wouldn't have if it wasn't for that. But what would you do now?
I see the black genes as pretty dominant. When a white person and a black person have a baby, it seems like the black genes are pretty dominant.
Well, they are dominant, and black people, even if they're only you know, half black or even less than half black, a third black or something, they still identify as blacks because they're Negro enough for people to notice it, and so they don't fit into white society exactly. But at the same time, they fit into our multiracial society here in the U.S. pretty darn well, and they do all right, and they're doing better and better all the time. So what then, with considering all this a huge problem, what would you say would be an approach that would accomplish something?
As far as what black people should do? I've said this. I think they should have their own country. I don't think, I mean, you see the way they self-segregate themselves. I don't think black people have so much of an interest of living with white people. They don't appear to at all. But the problem is now these Jews have set up these black organizations and then set it up so they get all this welfare, to where they're now utterly dependent on this system, and they just want to, you know, keep doing what they're doing, just getting government money and living in these neighborhoods, these ghetto type neighborhoods, and you know, with a lot of drugs and violence and all this. I mean, they're pretty broken down as a people. So I don't know really what that would look like to give them their own nation, how they would be able to function in that situation. But I think a lot of
people control their own people. They'd have to control their own people, which would be hard. You know, the better ones, the more mixed ones, would probably become naturally, you know, running things. Not always, but, you know, in large part. And then they'd have to control all these others. And they don't even like these ignorant blacks that they have. They don't even want to be around them themselves. But that's what they would have to do. Everybody has to look after their own people. That's the way I see it. I'm not in one of those groups.
I see it that way as well, and I think they could figure something out. I mean, a big part of this is, I mean, you have to say there is a socioeconomic element, and there's also these Jews giving them this rap music, telling them to kill each other, and then sending all these drugs and guns directly into their neighborhoods and saying, here, we gave you the plan and this rap music. Now here's the supplies. Go do it. And this is because they do have this much more aggressive type of nature than whites or any other race do, besides possibly the Arabs. Well, but no, I would say blacks are more so than Arabs. But
The mestizos are too tough for the blacks in Southern California. So I don't know.
The Mexican gangs, they're pretty rough. But a big part of this is the whole situation that they've just perpetuated this. And, you know, they play on us more with this materialism and this obsession with wealth. Because I think that's part of our nature. We grew up in this frozen Northland where, you know, you didn't know where your next meal was coming from, and you developed this hoarding type mentality. And now they're able to play on white people of just money, money, money. You need more things in your house so you'll be safe. And this goes to something deep in our psychology of back when we were living in these frozen lands, and we didn't always know where the next meal was coming from. You know, you had to go kill large mammals, and there weren't very many of them, and people obviously starved to death if they weren't, making sure they had enough. So this is something that they're able to play on us. And in Africa, obviously, I mean, this was a situation of constant wars. When you read about African society, pre-colonial African society, which obviously there had to be some white people there to write about it, but when the first whites were going in there and writing about the way they interacted, I mean, it was just all war, just constant war. Sort of like it is now in Africa, or like it is in some ghetto black neighborhood in the United States. So they play on that. They play on people's weaknesses. And what they've done with the blacks is given them this rap music and then all these drugs and guns to act out these, what I would say are like tribal fantasies. And with us, they do the materialism. So, you know, I think if you remove that element, the blacks are going to have more of a chance of working something out. I mean, if you removed drugs from black society, right there, you would have a raise by, you know, 10 times. They would be in a better status.
Well, what do you think of the talk about secession? Do you see any solution in that? How would that, secession?
Black secession?
Well, what? The blacks aren't going to secede. Somebody would have to secede them, I guess, but yeah, somehow, but you're talking about separating, giving them their own country, how would that be, if their country was here, they'd be dividing the United States up.
Yeah, I don't really have any problem with dividing the United States up. I don't think it would be practical or even moral to try and send these people back to Africa. You know, there's still a lot of land here, and I believe all the Mexicans should be sent back to Mexico. All these Arabs and all the rest of these people should be sent back to wherever they came from. But I mean, blacks, I don't really think that would be fair or make any kind of sense to try and send them back to Africa. You know, I grew up around black people. I don't have a lot of negative feelings towards black people in general. Or maybe I do have feelings in general, but as individuals, I don't think they're bad people. I think the best option would be to give them land within the present U.S.
Well,
borders.
They don't work.
Well,
to give them an area. I don't know how much they want to work the land, although they used to work the land, I guess.
They
don't. They're so used to the government taking care of them now.
Well, yeah, it would be a big thing. I mean, I've always said that, you know, when Malcolm X and the black nationalists were talking about this in the 60s, if we would have just given him his own nation, he was obviously intelligent. He could have figured out how to make this work. It was before all these drugs. I think he could have figured out a way to make it work. He was like I consider him to be kind of like a Hitler type figure for the blacks. And of course the Jews, the government went in there and killed him, and then put up this poster boy, Martin Luther King, who is just a tool. You know, David Duke has actually done all that research, that he was having sex with all these white women and he was just a weirdo, and he was just like a puppet type figure to preach this integration, which is impossible and destructive to both peoples. I mean, trying to integrate blacks and whites, it obviously has not worked, and the amount of time that we've already tried to do this, it's clearly never going to work unless you did have more of this breeding and breeding until we were just both mixed together, then it would work. But
well, that's why they want to do that. They want, that's why they want that, so that we'll all get along and won't be stirring anything up. Well, let me ask you before, we don't have too much time left. Why did you say to this iconoclast on his radio program, "I'm only attracted to black girls"?
Well, that might have been a little bit tongue in cheek, but you
know, because
I
don't
was
know
with,
what came before that. You know, I don't know what he said to you.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about that. I have at the time I was in Asia and I was with I had Asian girlfriends. You know, I lived there
talking,
for a long time.
You were
and
talking
of course, you
to
know,
this guy on the radio in Asia. I thought you were here.
No, I was in a little town. I mean, I know I was in Asia. I can't actually remember the exact date that was recorded or
he called
what
you
was going
in,
on exactly.
He called you in Asia.
It was on Skype, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So all right. I wasn't talking about American
I didn't
black
know
women.
That.
I've never had I've never had any relations with them. I've had
obviously, I mean, I was living in Asia. Yeah, I had Asian girlfriends. Mm-hmm. Filipinos are usually pretty dark skinned, so that's what I would have been talking about. Yeah.
Would you, are you still, one time in one of your essays, you said, right, I'm still trying to get over this, some word you used, like it was real set into you, attraction to Asian women. And then later you said you were just joking that you weren't really attracted to Asian women. So what is the deal?
No, I am attracted to Asian women. I'm not, okay. I mean, that's a physical thing. That's not something that I feel, you know, shame over, that I need to say that Asian women are not attractive. That just sounds silly to say that you're not biologically attracted. As far as Asian women have this femininity that, especially in America, has just been stripped from white women. You don't see this kind of behavior at all among white women, this very, very feminine type of attitude and perception of men and the way they relate to men. You just don't see that at all in America. So, you know, when you've grown up without that, when you see it, it's a primal thing to find that very attractive. So yeah, I mean, I think most men, are able to understand that. I'm sure they are. So that's not something that I feel ashamed of or that I, you know, would try to hide or act like that's not something I've felt before. What I would hope, I mean, when I watch,
okay, we've got about 1 minute, so keep that in mind.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, when I watch these old movies, like, you know, Grace Kelly and this type of stuff, white women did used to act like that. They just don't anymore.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Right. Well, that's true. And a lot of white men are attracted to, Asian women for that reason. And they're attracted to Mexican women and all that because they think that they're not as pushy, you know. They stay in the background more, and men do like that. That doesn't mean that that's the way all women want to be. But we've got 30 seconds now, so I want to thank you very much, Andre. You're a real good sport, and you answered all the questions that I had, and I want to thank the listeners and thank the callers, and invite you to come back again next week. And I don't know who will be here, but do visit Andre's website. I visit it a lot at totalfascism.com. And it sounds like our music, I don't hear it, but our music is on, so we'll say goodnight. Good night, Andre.
Good night, Carol.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.